Yes, thank you for the question. Well, the market sniper, funny enough, I've got a couple of analogies that tie in with it, which I'll share with you. One of them being in South Africa, the Kruger National Park was almost a national institution, and young families almost, as a matter of course, took the little tykes through the park to spot, you know, all the variety of animals, a place as big as Wales where animals still roam free. And it was certainly a box-ticking exercise, much as seeing as much of the game out there was a box-ticking exercise. You know, you say, oh, you know, lion, antelope, you know, if you're very lucky, you know, you've got a bit of rhino, and if you're exceptionally lucky, you would see one of the big cats like a leopard or a cheetah, the spotted cat, and that was a great rarity. And largely people would drive around on these roads that had no traffic at all. Some of them were dirt, some of them were just tarmac, but there's no paintings on the roads or anything, and expect and look to see what was going on. And this would usually be after they've got up, it's holiday, and usually mid-morning through midday into mid-afternoon, and then they'd be back in the camp for a beer or a drink or a jump in the pool. And it was very rare to see things like leopards. We did this whole experience, as everybody else does, the retail market, I'm going to call it, and that was it. Once you've done it once or twice, you tend not to feel an absolute need unless you're a real enthusiast. My father developed an interest in birds, ornithology, because there was a strange starling that kept dive bombing him near the work, and he decided he wanted to know what it was. He got Robert's Bird Book, why does it do this? And so developed an ornithological interest. And we went back to the Kruger Park, but this time we went back as people that had a really specific mission, that really wanted to do something, and that was to photograph birds, because he was also a very good photographer. And this time we actually got up really early, because that's when you got the bird action, early in the morning, still dark, heading out on the road. This time we were one of very few people. There would be the odd person that you'd nod to in the morning who'd ordered an early breakfast that was heading out. These were the pros. And we would get to all the best sites. So there was hand-picked sites. You knew in advance where you're going. You weren't just having an amble around the roads like most people in the original experience. And we would go to bird sighting areas where you could actually get out of the vehicle and sit in a hut. And man-made movement was not visible. And you could sit and observe. And you would observe at these high probability locations by water. And all sorts of things. And suddenly a whole new realm opened up. We got excellent photography of birds. We had the most amazing things. And more interestingly, we saw incredible amounts of game. Part of the original experience we should have got, we saw leopards in the open, drinking water, making kills. The extremity and the detail of what we've seen, we suddenly realized all the action is at the high probability locations at the time that the animals are active. And that what we were doing was expecting the world originally to comply to our holiday cycle and to throw the whole pantomime in front of the road in front of us in our moving vehicle and act it all out. While in fact, the best things to do is to go into their space at their time and to be high probability. This became a very interesting analogy for me for retail trading versus professional trading. So, you know, if you're really serious about FX and you want to catch a move, you know, 68% of the time, the first hours tick from 6 to 7 or 6:30 to 7:30, the movement that many of the major pairs is how it will close for the day. So you can't expect to switch your PC on at 9:30 in the morning. If you're trading in that manner, and that is your strategy, you've missed the key thrust of the market when the institutions are initially getting involved. So that was the one aspect. The other part of the analogy is that I had an interest in, because of the army experience, I had an interest in war. I know the role Vietnam played in American history, and I was fascinated by the tunnel rats and all of these people, incredible situations. And you can't help eventually coming to learn about snipers. And when I found out about the efficiency of the average soldier, generally an average infantryman is not a particularly efficient killer of enemy. That's maybe not a bad thing, by the way. I'm generally fairly pacifist. But in terms of just measuring from an efficiency point of view, they just hold ground and make a bit of noise, put rounds in the air, and keep heads down. You come to realize this, and are as much a danger to their fellow infantrymen as they are to any other enemy, which you rarely get clear sightings of. However, there was the segment of highly trained elite that were almost feared by their own tribe and army for their ruthlessness, and this were the snipers. And they were very specifically trained. And if they were ever caught, you know, they would almost surely be tortured and killed because they were deemed a kind of evil beyond evil in terms of a normal war because of their deadliness. And when you look at the numbers, the average round fired per casualty in the Second World War was 250,000 rounds by soldiers. That expanded to well over 400,000 by Americans in the jungle in Vietnam War. It's an awful lot of lead being thrown into the trees with little effect. And a sniper's number in terms of casualty was 1.3 rounds fired, one casualty hit. So if you consider that in terms of efficiency, it's extreme. So then if you study the concept of sniperdom, you find that these people do certain things. They very rarely shoot. That's why their ratio is exceedingly good. When they shoot, they're damn sure, and a whole bunch of criteria have been met. In other words, they don't shoot low-value targets. They're not going to shoot another soldier and give away their position where they've been in reconnaissance for 6-7 days, literally, relieving themselves in a hole in the ground that they have to lie next to, covered in leaves. They go for high-value targets. They don't take the first shot that is offered. They wait for the absolute best circumstances to get the shot. They want an absolute guaranteed kill. They want to be able to get away. So they don't shoot when there's tens of thousands of people. They get a high value target on its own, or where they can shoot the driver as well within short circumstances. That is the methodology of sniping. Now, if we are to see that every time we're going into the market, we are actually taking on something that can give or can take from us, in a sense it's a battle, you have to be very selective about your criteria. You have to say, I'm not going to take the 50-50 trades, because on balance with transaction costs in the long run, I am whittling myself away. It's the same as playing blackjack, you know, it's maybe the best odds that you have. You play it long enough, the house wins, you know, short of having a very clear edge like card counting. And so this is what you have to do with your trading. You have to say, I want to grab that key moment where, and for me, in price action, it's when the price action is really, really tight. But maybe we'll get in more into that later on. But that's the backdrop behind the market sniper analogy.
That's a very, very good analogy about the kill rate, 1.3. I didn't know it was that high. So your speciality is high market, is high probability, fast moving breakout trades. So just tell us a bit about that.
Yes. So high probability. High probability generally means on balance I expect it should win. So that I'm being a bit close to the line. I'm saying 51% up should be high probability. I normally feel I believe in that trade a lot higher than that, but I'm setting the pass mark. You should win more often than you lose. However, there's an important add-on to that, because that's not particularly special. 51% is all my trades are very high risk reward. So I'm actually asking for a very big move in my favor without the possibility of an initial very small move against me. So the high probability of 50% within that confine does make it quite attractive. So generally, you psychologically, many losers in a row is a very destructive. We're very emotional and psychological beings. So the kind of person that would just keep tapping and taking trades, if he needs 100 trades and he's quite okay with 99 losers, but the one winner pays for all the losers and the massive return, generally I think very few of us would be in a position where we would be able to really cope with that, just from a point of view of emotion and psychology. So I think you have to look at yourself emotionally and psychologically and say, what can we survive from? That strategy that I've just described, 99 losses in a row, being totally normal and eventually the winner, you just have to miss a single trade and you've got to go through another 99 potential losses. You have to keep taking. I think only an algorithm or a black box has the stomach to keep taking and another loss and have yourself another loss and have yourself another loss. It's just drip, drip torture. On the other hand, many people go the other way and they scalp and they want to have lots of winning trades and they're happy to snatch 5 pips or very small moves with very deep stops. But when it goes wrong, it can kill you. I find that very denerving because anytime you've collected a bunch of pennies, you could have those 10-pound fines suddenly come and take everything away and still hand you down a loss. So you never have that confidence in being up. So if I look at those two extremes, I don't belong in either side. So high probability means there must be a reasonable mix of winners with your losers. So the biggest focus I come into is on the risk reward. Most people I find are trading when, and this is the benefit of teaching what I seek to learn as well. I've been around and I get to relive my early experience again by seeing it in others. And most people are trading and if they're lucky getting 50%, often less, but maybe getting 45%. And often those trade risk rewards are less than 1:1. So you are in a process of whittling yourself down. And most actually don't measure, so they don't even know. And on that post-it note, it's focus, discipline, persistency, and measure. So you can't improve anything that you don't measure. So one of the first things I would say is you've got to start measuring your trades. How many are winners? What are your risk rewards? To do that, you have to have specified your entry, your stop, and your target. Failure to do that, you can't define your risk reward. And what tends to happen is people have, in the early stages of their trading career, just a hunch on direction. They buy, and then once in the market, they decide, whoops, it's going against me. Where will I get out? And they say, give it some more time, give it some more time, give it a longer chance. And that becomes, instead of a hard line, a contract with yourself, something that becomes negotiable, feeling on depending on your emotions. Once you've committed to the trade, you're a cheerleader for the trade. So you are, in effect, drunk for that view. And you're not capable of an emotionally balanced decision. That all has to be done pre-entry. So what tends to happen, I consider stop losses a bit like virginity. You start tampering with them, it gets a whole bunch easier the second and the third time after you've done it once. And you're in trouble. So the whole trade must be pre-agreed. And that means you're watching, you're observing a setup slowly coming to truth, and you say at that level, when we break, in other words, the market takes us in other words, the market is self-affirming and you are moving with it, I will be long, and I've already said that level below at that point where the price interacted and stood its ground is my stop loss, and I will be out. And the whole order is represented, the entry, the stop, and then your take profit. And the take profit, we use the geometry, which is one of the reasons why I like volatile setups, which are then tying back down into a very low volatility period. So your stop can be tight, but the geometry of the initial volatility implies the next leg up potential scale. So we use that geometry to project the target.